right now I'm very happy to welcome to our program Jonah Minkoff-Zern. He is a co-director of Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign. And Jonah, glad you could join us again tonight to talk about this ominous fifth anniversary of the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling, which opened the floodgates of unlimited and unaccountable election campaign spending by corporations. And so, Jonah, maybe just say a word about your program that you co-direct there at Public Citizen, the program called Democracy is for People campaign.
Sure. So we're working to overturn the Citizens United ruling and to pass a constitutional amendment that would establish that corporations don't have constitutional rights or the same rights as people, and that money is not speech, that campaign contributions are not a form of protected speech that cannot be regulated by government. So essentially we're saying that billionaires and mega corporations shouldn't be able to spend unlimited amount of money to influence the outcome of our elections.
And so maybe you could talk about the significance of this fifth anniversary of the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling by summarizing exactly what that ruling meant to our campaign finance system. And we could talk about some of the other kind of parallel rulings the Supreme Court made since, like the McCutcheon versus FEC ruling. But first of all, maybe just in brief form, tell us what exactly Citizens United meant for our campaign finance system in the U.S.
Sure. Well, Citizens United, I guess it was a long time coming as far as some of the members of the court saw it. And they basically they saw an opportunity to really take on campaign regulation in the United States. What the case should have been was a ruling about whether or not Citizens United could air a documentary about Hillary Clinton within 60 days of the elections without disclosing the donors. And what it became, what the court, through a very specific political agenda, they had the parties re-argue the case and decided to rule on a much, much more broad issue of whether corporations and unions could spend unlimited amounts of money on quote-unquote independent expenditures without being regulated by the government. And the court decided, as listeners know, that independent expenditures, that expenditures that are not made directly to candidates could not be regulated by government. And that led to a huge boon in political spending, to the point in the presidential election where over $6 billion was spent on the race. And in the past election, the numbers have doubled what they were before. So we're seeing a huge increase in campaign spending and a huge increase in the influence of mega corporations, and also through a subsequent ruling in individual donors to campaigns. And that means that people like you and me, who don't have millions of dollars to spend, that our voices are not being heard in the political process.
Yeah, and just to play devil's advocate here, there are supporters of the Citizens United ruling who would say, more money, more speech, isn't that wonderful? But maybe lay out for our listeners some of the reasons why you think these big players, the wealthy corporations and the extremely wealthy individuals who are now kingmakers, if you will, in some of these political campaigns, why that's a bad thing for democracy.
Sure. Well, I think, I mean, the idea of more money, more speech, it's a simplistic idea that once you really start looking into the races, once you start looking into races, whether they're on a federal level and congressional races or presidential races, or whether they're local races, it becomes really clear that a voice of the average person, when someone like the Koch brothers are spending money on thousands of political ads, when these two individuals are responsible for thousands of political ads, that their voice is amplified at such a level that the voice of the average day citizen, that the ideas of the average day citizen, doesn't happen in the political process. So it really, and this is what the dissent argued in the McCutcheon ruling, which we can talk about more, if you'd like, but they said that that it drowns out speech, that it doesn't allow speech, and it actually is against the idea of a marketplace of ideas that the freedom of speech is supposed to protect, because we're not being heard, because there's not a marketplace, there's a few individuals who are controlling the dialogue.
Jonah Minkoff-Zern is our guest this evening on Counterpoint. He's co-director of Public Citizens' Democracy is for People campaign. And Jonah, maybe review the numbers one more time for us. Review what, since it's been 5 years since the Supreme Court ruled in the Citizens United case, what kind of increases have we seen in expenditures? Maybe you could take a look at, you know, some of the election campaigns we've seen, and how this ruling has pushed spending upwards.
Sure. Well, I mean, the presidential election in 2012 was the most obscene as far as total expenditures, and that there are over $6 billion that was spent on federal elections, a large portion of the expenditures coming into elections are coming from this small group of individuals. So there were 60 donors who were responsible for $140 million in outside expenditures in that election. So they were responsible for the equivalent of the $1.4 million donors who gave in the presidential election. So the grassroots democracy that existed, the grassroots idea, the grassroots spending in the presidential race, was the equivalent of the expenditures of 60 outside donors. A significant note too is that much of that outside expenditure is coming from undisclosed sources. So in the most recent elections, in the 2014 elections, 50% of the outside spending was undisclosed, meaning that we don't know where the money is coming from. It could be coming from money outside the country. It could be coming from large corporations that obviously are benefiting from the decisions of who's elected. But we don't know. We don't have a means to actually say, well, look, we're going to boycott this company, or we're not comfortable with this politician because of where they're getting their money. So it's both an issue of where the money's coming from, of the increase in spending, but also us not even being able to tell or have a voice or not being able to assert, well, we feel uncomfortable with this spender, and we see that this spender is going to influence or unduly influence the person who gets into office.
Jonah, one other aspect, aside from the money that's actually being spent, I've heard it said that just the mere threat of these millionaires and billionaires who could send someone an email or make a phone call and say, if you get in this race, I'm going to put, you know, $1 million against you, so just forget about it. You know, I'm wondering how much the threat of this unaccountable and secret money, unlimited and secret money, can play in just, you know, changing the landscape of politics in our country beyond the actual money that in the end is spent on each election cycle.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I think that if we're, if we're looking at an issue, say we talk about climate change, and someone's going to vote on climate change, not only are they thinking about the money for, you know, it's not, the money doesn't actually have to even come into their race. Just the threat or the idea that that if I vote for legislation that's going to limit the impact of climate change, but also is against the interest of a big oil company, then I'm going to have to face hundreds of millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars in my next election against me. The oil company doesn't even need to spend the money. It's just the threat of that money uh, that that can prevent, that will prevent someone from acting in what they know is the best interest, and also what they know is the interest of the majority of their constituents. They're no longer really responding to their constituents. They're responding to the money, because they know that the ads that they run, that the way that they run their campaign is going to be influenced, that they're going to be able to influence the voters to win their election, not based on following the voters' whims, but based on following the donors' whims.
Right. Are there examples that are very stark in your mind on how the Citizens United ruling by the Supreme Court affected certain races in this most recent 2014 midterm election, you know, where gargantuan amounts of money really changed a race here and there? Generally speaking, I know that we could say there's a lot more money flowing in, but are there certain races you could sort of illustrate this fact for us?
Sure. Well, it was over $3.5 billion that was spent total these were midterm elections. And for example, I'm here in New York right now, and we're getting ready for a big rally in Albany on Wednesday here. In New York, the control of the Senate really was determined, in the days before the election. There was a huge amount of money that poured into a small number of races here in New York, a small number of races in the Senate, right before the election. And it came from the big realtors. It came from, big industry basically here in New York. And it flipped the control of the New York State Senate, that money. And when I go meet with people in Albany here in New York, they're really outraged by it. They really can point to that money that came into the elections right before. And basically it really shows how anti-democratic and how anti-speech it is, because or anti-free speech or promoting of the of a good dialogue, because what happened is that these big spenders came in right before the elections. They put out these ideas. The ideas don't have to be true. They don't have to be founded in fact, and there's no place for dialogue around the ideas. They just flooded the airways with them, and they were able to flip the outcomes of the races here. It shows that, and I guess a counterpoint, for some reason, Chevron in Richmond, California, in a city of 100,000 people, I believe it's about 80% are people of color, where they spent $3 million to work to try to influence the outcome of the elections there, because they're a big polluter. Their headquarters is there, and they also have a big refinery. So they're a big polluter in Richmond, California. They tried to influence the outcome of their city council race. For some reason, they decided to disclose their contributions, and people really fought back against that. And that's an example. I don't think disclosing of donations or of campaign contributions is the solution. But what it did is it enabled people to really mobilize against them, and they were able to beat back Chevron and beat back their candidates. I don't think that means that if we have disclosure that we don't also need to have regulation of funds, but it shows that people are able to fight against this. Another example of people fighting against the big corporate spenders is here in New York, where people took on the frackers. They took on the fracking industry, and they were able to gain to have Cuomo say that there's not going to be fracking here in New York. How long that stands and whether that stands for good, I think that really depends on how we mobilize and how we beat back the idea of money in politics. But the people's voice is, even in the short term, able to win over the voice of the mega corporations and over the voice of ultra wealthy. But that's not the case usually. And that's what we saw in these midterm elections, is that almost always the big spenders won. And the big spenders are also getting more sophisticated. They're learning what messages to use. They're learning how to frame things in a way that's not about being honest, but it's about winning. It's about finding the ways to manipulate people to get who they want into office.
Well, before we get to some of the details of the rally in Washington and other places around the country where they're commemorating the fifth anniversary of the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling, that's, again, this Wednesday, January 21st, Jonah, I wonder if you would review for us, tell our listeners what actions are being advocated here in terms of overturning the Citizens United ruling? Primary among them, of course, is a constitutional amendment, which, you know, is a steep climb in terms of the votes required, the states that have to ratify any such constitutional amendment. But where are we at with this? Maybe you can explain. We don't have a lot of time here left, but just explain where we're at now. What's the status of that effort?
Sure. Well, we had a great victory for the movement in the fact that U.S. Senate took a vote on it on a constitutional amendment this past fall. And a constitutional amendment is the only way to overturn Citizens United. It's the only way to place regulations now and outside spending. And really, they opened it up a lot into direct spending. Really, at this point, one can give up to $5.9 million directly to candidates in a two-year election cycle, and because of the McCutcheon ruling that took place last year. And the only way to overturn these things, the only way to have regulations is through a constitutional amendment. We got a vote in the U.S. Senate because of the movement, because of the grassroots outrage that that the Senate was seeing, and they took a vote, and we had 55 U.S. senators show their support for a constitutional amendment through that vote, which was both the vote and the fact that we had a majority and 55 vote in favor were not things we were expecting were possible. And it really is because of over 4 million signatures now that have been gathered nationwide, the 16 states that have called for a constitutional amendment, including Connecticut, including all New England states except for New Hampshire, where we're working, and over 600 local municipalities that have called for an amendment. So there's a powerful grassroots movement, but it's a long-term struggle. We know it's going to take a while. But it's also just keeps every step of the way is happening faster than we imagined. So it's an exciting movement. It's a real, and it's really taking form in more and more powerful ways. And I think it's coupled also with the movement around public financing. And we really are working closely in hand with folks who are working on public financing of elections. And I think both of them are necessary. I think both having an alternative source of funding for elections and preventing billionaires and mega corporations from spending unlimited amounts are necessary.
And Jonah, just tell us the threshold here for the number of states that have to ratify a constitutional amendment, or just sketch out the process for us. What has to happen for this thing to be successful?
Sure, right. So we had a majority of the Senate, but that's not passing. We need two-thirds of both houses of Congress. And then we need three-fourths of the states to ratify. So it's a huge lift, but every generation has its constitutional amendment, and this is ours. Each time when people took it up, it seemed impossible. The first time the suffragists got a vote in the U.S. Senate, they lost with a 15-35 vote, and it took them 15 years after the Supreme Court ruling reaffirming they didn't have the right, well, that women didn't have the right to vote, to get that vote. So it takes, you know, our movement's moving quickly. It takes time, and I think it's going to seem insurmountable at times. But because it's such a widely popular thing, because every time it gets put to voters, like in Colorado and Montana, people vote 75% in favor of it, because people across the political spectrum are really so outraged at the money dominating our election cycle, I believe it's going to happen, and I believe we're going to make the change. But it's going to take a really broad grassroots movement to make it happen.
Well, Jonah, again, briefly, because we're tight for time, tell us what events are going to be happening around the country on this Wednesday, the 5th anniversary of the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling.
Sure. There's over 60 events taking place the week of Citizens United, and there are events all across the country. There's a big rally at the Chamber of Commerce in D.C., the major dark money, outside money spender, in elections. There's a rally, as I mentioned, here in Albany, Albany, New York. There's a huge event in New Hampshire where people are marching from all corners of the state. In Augusta, Maine, there is a big rally at the state capitol where they're introducing a public finance ballot initiative, where they got enough signatures to place on the ballot. There's huge rallies in California and San Francisco and LA, but really all over the country. And people can find out, you can find out where one is near you at moneyout-votersin.org. That's moneyout-votersin.org. Has a map of all the different events taking place around the country. And it's probably too late to plan one if there's not one near you, but people are still planning. We've been showing the movie Pay to Play, and a lot of people are going to be planning that, you know, throughout the spring, as a way to educate people and engage the community, and we're happy to work with people on that too. So it's an exciting time for our movement, and I think there's more and more organizations that are seeing, whether they're labor, whether they're environment, whether it's civil rights, whether it's faith-based groups, that are seeing that their agenda is not going to be heard, and they're not going to be successful in fulfilling their agenda without getting big money out of politics. So there's more and more people coming together around this agenda and this movement.
Yeah, and just to underscore what you said there, I've said before, and I'll say it again, that I do think campaign finance reform and overturning this ruling by the Supreme Court on Citizens United and McCutcheon are really the Rosetta Stone to revitalize our democracy. Our system of elections, I think, or in the opinion of many, is irrevocably broken. And I think, you know, if you had to draw or connect the dots between the lowest voter turnout in more than 70 years in this country in the 2014 midterm election and money in politics, I think it's quite plausible that all the money flowing in puts voters off and they don't even bother coming out. I don't know if you think that's a possible link there, but it just seems to me that when the system is corrupted, people don't want to participate.
Yeah, I think that's right, Scott. I think people are losing faith, and I think, you know, that's not our solution, that we have to take charge. And that's, you know, in little examples like in Richmond, California, like the anti-fracking movement here in New York, people are taking charge and fighting back, and in the broader constitutional amendment where we got the vote in the Senate and where we got the 55 votes. Those votes came through hard-fought victories, senator by senator, where we planned rallies and targeted senators who weren't on board yet. And that's not the 66 or 67 that we needed in the Senate, but it was really a lot closer than anyone was expecting, and it's because of the movement. So I think, you know, we saw that in the 2014 elections, people feeling really disenfranchised and not coming out and voting. And I think people got something that's not going to serve the values and visions that they believe in. And I hope that people will go out and vote and will mobilize against this. And I think we really need to turn the fact that 75% of people every single time this comes to a question, vote in favor of it. It really is kind of the magic number. It's really interesting. Anywhere it gets put on the ballot, whether it's a small town in a rural area of the country or the state of Colorado or Montana, it's always 75%. We need to turn that into votes. We need to turn that outrage and help people see how this affects our bottom line, our whether we have good education, whether we have health care, whether we have clean air, whether we have money for veterans. Whether small businesses are able to compete and flourish, all of those things are determinant on whether we have control of our democracy and whether we have a voice in our political process.
Okay. Well, one more time on the website. Public Citizens website is citizen.org, but you have the other website. If you just mention that one more time, that'd be great.
Sure. It's moneyout-votersin.org, and that will redirect you to a great map on our new site, and you'll be able to see all the events taking place around the country. That's our coalition site. It's moneyout-votersin.org.
As always, thanks so much for making time for us, Jonah. Appreciate all the important work you're doing out there.
And, thanks so much for having me, Scott.
We'll look forward to having you back. Thanks. Good night. That's Jonah Minkoff-Zern, co-director of Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign.